You are listening to the For the Rose Tech Podcast, episode 294, where Amazon shows off their new Echo and Microsoft builds a new platform.
Episode 294 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is May the 7th, 2017. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and just barely clutching victory from the jaws of defeat is my brother James Furlough.
We must be talking about the Warriors game. Is that what we're referring to? They won.
Yes, the important part, they did win, and that's the only thing that matters.
So they were behind. I obviously didn't see the game.
Up until the third.
I saw the final score, though. I was like, oh, wow, they barely won, but they won.
Third quarter, they were behind by, like, 10 points.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, and it was like...
trying to make a challenge.
And it was, like, end of the first, they were behind 10 points. End of the second, they were behind 10 points.
Wow.
And the third, they were... Yeah, it was... took a little bit to... just took a bit of time, you know? They've been relaxing. They've been on vacation for the last week. Well, the Spurs keep playing, so they, you know, they had to warm back up, get back into it. It happens.
Wow. Was it a home game, away game?
Home game. That's what happens when you're the number one seed.
Oh, yeah. Well, interesting.
It is.
Did the Cavs also play recently, or are they still on their little break?
I think they play tomorrow, but I'm not actually remember.
I mean, that's who they're going to play in the finals. We all know that.
Yes.
Just are biding time.
Inevitably.
I don't know. The Spurs, though, right? That's who they play?
Yeah.
So maybe the Spurs will put up a fight.
Spurs get well. Evidently they did. I mean, they put up more of a fight than we were expecting. So this is not related to any particular topic this week. So this seems like the best time to bring it up. But I'm moving.
What?
I know.
But I've really been enjoying the background scene here, which admittedly has been a little more messy than normal. Is that because you're moving?
It's building up, yeah. And by building up, I mean, once I like fully committed to you, I'm moving. I just stopped trying as hard, which is not healthy, but...
So, when are you moving?
Well, let me show you these, James.
Today's Mother's Day, the 14th.
These are the... These
so, as soon as possible.
These are keys. I get to...
So, you sign a rental agreement.
Yes.
Month to month, year lease, 2 year lease. What do you
sign for? 1 year lease.
1 year lease.
Right.
Is it an automatic renewal or does it convert to a month to month?
Converts to month to
month. Does it have a ratchet clause in it? Tell me about these things.
Converts to month at that point.
Okay. Okay. And is it just you?
No, it is. It's me.
Uh-huh.
I'm moving out from living with one of our cousins to move to live with one of our cousins. Sort of a tradition, I guess. This is my MO. Yeah, no, but we're there's got another and a third mutual friend of ours who's
a
gonna
third mutual friend. Are all three of you on the rental agreement?
Yes.
Interesting. Do you need all three of you to qualify for the income to live there?
No.
That's good.
But it was super close with if it were just two of us. So and in a super competitive market where they get many offers from many people, it was really nice to have three people so that we would be super.
Okay, I'm just curious because we're gonna calibrate it. So what's your rent? What is it? Is it three bedroom, two bedroom?
It's three bedroom, one
three bedroom,
and it's like a master
bath, two bath,
two bath.
Okay, what's your total rent?
Total rent is $2,800.
Oh my god. Oh,
I won't even tell you what the I'm going to throw this out there just so people have a difficult time guessing how much I make. I won't tell you what the multiple that they required was.
Was it 3x?
I'm not going to tell you, but it was
typical 3x.
It was insane.
What was your deposit requirement?
It was only $2,000. It wasn't bad.
Only $2,000.
Well, a lot of places they want first, last,
and
a deposit equal to to a month's rent. So, if, like, a lot of places, they wanted day one, they would have wanted a, you know, if it were $2,800.
Yeah, they wanted almost $6,000. Yeah, they wanted.
Well, no.
Five and a half.
Well, yeah, a lot of these places would want three times. The first
It's 2,800.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They won almost
eight grand.
8 grand for you to win.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It can get crazy. So this guy was being kind of reasonable with 18,000.
Please tell me this is in San Francisco or is this San Jose?
Campbell.
Campbell?
Yeah, it's like,
which, I mean, it's actually San Jose.
It's actually a San Jose address, but Campbell's so big. Yeah, you can't like, you're like right there, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Wow. Dang.
Yeah.
So I know your current place was pretty close to work.
Yes.
How's this one relative to that?
Horrendous. It's terrible. Oh. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to me. It's the only.
How long do you anticipate your commute to be? I just want to know what you're paying $2,800 to get.
5 minute walk from like a really hip, cool downtown. That's what I'm paying $2,800 for. But for my commute, 45 minutes.
Both ways?
If there's no accidents, just traffic.
No. I'm saying like that's round trip 45 minutes.
Oh no. No.
Just one way.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's no accidents.
Yeah. If there's an accident, it can kind of change that calculus
a
little bit.
You have to love it there, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know what the nice part is? I was getting kicked out. Our roommates getting, or our cousins
that
getting
is
married.
Nice.
Well, our cousins getting married, so it's not like, it just, the thing for me was it wasn't
You're
like
leaving
I
for
was,
a good reason.
Well,
I got it.
Yes, I'm leaving for a good reason, and importantly, it's not like I decided I wanted a better situation, so I'm leaving. Like, no, it's just, I just had to find a good situation. This will be good enough. You know, it's a Bay Area.
So
it can't not have
are
traffic.
You getting the master?
What? See, now that's the difficult.
I feel
push.
Like you're packing up. Like this should be decided by now.
Well,
because let's see, if you split the rent evenly, you'd be paying $933 each. I'm just trying to figure out are you, which that's actually reasonable for rent. I'm trying to figure out if you're more like at nine or if you're more like 1,000. Because whoever gets the master should be paying 1,000. Because I'm guessing they get the bathroom too.
Yes.
And they should almost be paying $1,200.
Yeah.
That's what I would suggest.
I would suggest that too. But I don't want to suggest it too aggressively because if I suggested
you might get
to, it. Yeah.
Ooh, it's an interesting negotiation.
Yeah. Oh,
you know where you'll end up.
Well, yeah. And what we've decided is that there's three rooms. One is the master is twice as big as the smallest room.
Whoa.
But we have a garage. With power and everything. So it's like you could have the garage and keep your car in there, or you could have the garage and have it as like a second, it's your second room in the house. And it's nearly as big as the master. So if you wanted to, you know, have this extra space, you could. And then the middle room is like the smallest room, doesn't really have any perks. And so the question becomes, okay, so how much should each person pay? What is that all worth?
Mm.
And it becomes especially complicated because I would be totally fine with any of the three of them. And so I can use that as a negotiating tactic to like either force them to go up, like
walk away.
Say, yeah. if they're like, oh, I only want to pay $50 extra to live in the master. That's all I can afford. I'd be like, well, I can afford $75 extra to live in the master. I just start pushing them up and be like, oh, yeah, but
that's interesting.
Have the master.
But you haven't figured that out.
No.
But you've already signed the rental agreement.
Yeah.
So are you using any cool tech to pay your rent? Like,
no.
Are you using some online system or you have to send them a check?
Yes.
Or...
We cleared that.
Is it a mom and pop thing or a big company?
It's a mom and pop thing.
Okay.
But this is the important part. And this is really what I wanted to get to, James, because important things that we had to nail down before we figure out rooms. The thing that we had to figure out first were barbecue, which we're still sorting out. Second one is internet. So I looked at our options for internet. And given our address.
Oh, no.
We have coverage from Comcast and AT&T.
Okay.
Which is nice because I'm told you can argue them against each other, which is cool. But best part is, not only do we have AT&T as an option, but we have AT&T Gigabyte Ethernet as internet as an option.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. And it's
how much is that a month?
$80.
That's reasonable.
I know. I know. We had all kind of been expecting to pay like $30 each a month for internet. And so like to get $80, we're like, yeah, I'm in. I'm done. I'm signing up. I'm super excited.
Wow, I don't even know what we're going to do with it.
I know. And everybody's like, warning me. They're like, well, you may not actually get gigabyte. Even if it's half of that, it's 500 megabytes a second. And when you say it like that, people go, oh, whoa. It's a quarter of that, it's ridiculous. The fastest internet you've ever used in your entire life. I mean, yeah, I'm okay with it.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah, and $80. That must be their intro price, though, or something. There's no way that's their stuff.
They claim it's for a whole year. Huh. They'll even give you a discount on TV if you sign up for TV.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited. Huh? Gonna have to figure out what decisions.
I had a guy, I had a rental that was open and I was doing tours this weekend. And there's one guy, he's struggling financially. And so I told him, I was like, well, give me a budget. Like, show me that you can make this work. You know, because it was one of those where, like, it was just close, right? This close thing. And I was like, but let's make sure you do it. He had to have internet. And he budgeted himself $200 a month for internet in his budget. And I looked at it and was like, really? He goes, well, you know, I stream games and stuff and I record them. He does like a podcast. And I was like, well,
you know, honestly, that's one of the things that I had to clarify with people is like, that is the downside to AT&T's Ethernet internet thing. Like, that's the trick, is that the download speed is a billion bytes per second, but their upload speed's probably still less than 10 megabytes per second. Because that really is, I would say that's the difference between business speeds and non-business speeds is upload speed.
Interesting.
The premise being that people in your house, you generally are only uploading a little bit, but you're downloading a lot. Whereas businesses are the ones that are uploading that information for you to download. So you do pay a lot more to get faster uptimes, and that's usually classified as business service. And $200 isn't unreasonable for business service. So,
well, congrats on moving. That sounds exciting.
Thank you. I'm excited.
To see the new setting when that happens next week.
Now the new backdrop. It's my current room. My current situation is pretty sweet. She's like, why don't you just take as much time as you need? So it'll be a process. I'm going to start moving stuff immediately. We're going to have to settle the bedroom thing over the next day or two. And then, I hope to be living there full time by the next podcast. That's my goal.
Okay.
But
all right. But maybe not.
But maybe not. Yeah. We might have to go into aggressive negotiations with the bedrooms. But you know what, James?
Well, you know, you can use Alexa to help you flip a coin, or Siri for that matter. But we'll get to that.
But the thing is, James, we're not here to talk about rooms. This week, like every week, we're here to talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I work for a really lame company that's not doing anything cool right now. I'm not in the news. I don't understand. Like, all these companies are doing super cool things, and then there's HPI, who I work for and who I helped found, so I guess I'm partially to blame. But during this podcast, as you can tell, I do not represent them or any of their opinions. I also own part of Twitter, and Etsy, and Lending Club, and we'll get to that at the end of the show.
Yes. Why do we always do that? We always leave Snapchat for the very end for me to get all anxious and outraged. Huh? That's a good point.
They don't deserve top billing anymore.
That's
ever.
I guess we now have proof that they don't deserve top billing. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're on the social internet. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is NextWiggin4.
I am James Furlow everywhere.
Yes.
Including Twitter, which is probably where I'm the most active.
Nice.
I'm honest.
And then furloughbros.com is the website that you can go to get all the information about this podcast, including all the clicks, links, videos, and audio clips that we have today during the show. Go there. Check it out. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter, which will deliver all this amazing content into your email box. Or it's like a great like week in summary sort of thing. Just kind of covers all the important stuff and gives you a bunch of links and articles to dive deeper if you so desire. Check it out.
Okay, we're going to start off with a question for this the show. And then eventually we'll talk about Amazon's thing and Microsoft's thing and Tesla's thing and Google's thing and not HP's thing.
Whoa.
That's how this is going to roll. But first question.
Okay.
Which tech giant would you drop?
Okay.
So in the New York Times, it's an interactive article. Mm. So I highly recommend furloughbros.com/294. Click on the link. And it asks the question, or it makes a statement, I guess. Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, and Alphabet are not just the largest tech companies in the world. They're also becoming the most powerful companies of any kind, essentially inescapable for any consumer or business that wants to participate in the modern world. But which of the frightful five is most unavoidable? I ponder the question in my column this week. So he starts off with a question. If an evil monarch forced you to choose, in which order would you give up these inescapable giants of tech?
So it's
only after you choose does he reveal his choice.
You have to go through in order which ones would you get rid of.
Yes. Yeah, so
who
would you get rid of first? You have Alphabet, Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, Amazon.
Are we going to get to see the choice that everybody else makes?
Yeah, he talks about that.
Okay, because I guarantee you, Facebook is the first one.
Okay, Facebook number one.
No, it's not
right,
mine.
What was yours?
Mine. If I had to pick one, which one to get rid of?
I'm going to type it in, and I'll tell you your results. Alphabet, Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, Amazon. Facebook's not your number one. Okay.
I'm trying to think of like, so, okay, you know what? I'm going to come at this a little bit differently. I'm actually going to go in which order would I least want to work for these companies?
That's not what this is.
Well, yeah, but kind of is.
No, it's not.
Cultures matter, James.
No, in terms of like, you can no longer use this software product. Come on, answer the question.
Wait, what's okay?
Don't answer a different question.
No. See, but I'm not sure. Which tech giant would, so if I had to get rid of it in my life, the first.
Yes, just gone. Yeah, you can't work for them anymore. You can't use their products anymore. It's gone.
Probably be Microsoft, then Apple.
And let's be clear, for Amazon, we're just talking about Amazon. We're not talking about AWS. He makes a distinction later on. You don't know that right now, but
let's
let that one go, because when you get rid of that one, you essentially get rid of the internet. So, you know, we got to be careful. But
I'd say get rid of Microsoft. I'd get rid of Microsoft first, Apple next.
Okay. Apple then, would be next.
Then probably Facebook.
You would get rid of Microsoft and Apple before Facebook.
What I'm able to get.
What is wrong with you? Question. How are you going to access Facebook?
Probably my Android phone.
Okay.
I'm just thinking pure utilitarian here. If I don't use enough Microsoft products, Apple products I prefer, but they're not irreplaceable.
But what are you going to replace them with? You killed Microsoft.
And Android. Man, like, I'd just go pure Google. I'd go pure internet. I'd have a Chromebook. I'd have Linux.
What would you do for a job?
And I'd have...
What computer do you use for your job?
I could easily find the software that would and run it. Like, there are CAD...
What, Linux?
There are CAD applications that will run in the browser that I use for personal work. And I just have to tell my boss, look, we're going to move over to that. You can do it in the browser now. And I'm just telling you, it's those two companies the least necessary. They make everything easier. They make everything like more elegant and faster, more powerful. But pure utility, I would give up the hardware before I'd give up the internet.
Okay.
And then I'd get rid of Amazon, and then I'd get rid of Alphabet, at least for what I need in my life. Alphabet would be is the most necessary because they cover the most topics. You know, you can buy stuff without Amazon as long as you have Google, but you can't Google search stuff without, and you can't, you know, just because you have
a phone.
You
could use DuckDuckGo instead of Google.
Not really. I mean, do I want good results or do I just want a set of results that may or may not have to do with what I'm looking for?
Fair enough. It's interesting because you start to, interesting. So I killed Facebook first. I was like, I can survive without Facebook. I can survive without Messenger. I can definitely survive without Instagram. I could probably get away without Messenger. It's super convenient. Obviously, they're all convenient. I mean, that's the part of the problem with this question, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to get rid of any of them. And I think a Messenger would be the one that would hurt me the most.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the updates.
What about Instagram? Not all up on the Instagram?
Nah, I don't know. It's okay.
What about Boomerang?
Oh, man. Oh, I forgot about Boomerang. I think I said Amazon second. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, now. That would be.
But I'm a recent convert to Amazon Prime, so that means I'd have to give up that. I'd give up my Echo. And again, letting go of AWS, because if you get rid of that, like, oh, goodbye Netflix.
Yeah,
and
yeah, the internet goes down.
So he's like, let's exclude that. But there's a part of me that's like, dude, that's part of it.
I feel like that's unfair. I mean,
right?
Well, and that's that is.
Otherwise, do I get to keep on YouTube? I don't.
Yeah. Yes, YouTube will still work, but pretty much no other video services will.
Right.
they everything else will go down once you turn off AWS.
Yeah, which maybe the argument would be, well, everyone would just switch over to Google or Microsoft. I'm like, oh no, I already got voted Microsoft.
Yeah, I know.
dang it.
You see, that's the interesting part is that they exclude AWS. That's how you know you have a dominant product. We have to exclude that product for it to like even be a fair comparison. Because you could get rid of the Google Web Services, you could get rid of Azure, and people would be like, yeah, we still have AWS.
Whatever.
It's fine.
But we have to exclude AWS. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. So I guess that says something, right? And if you go that route, you're like, oh, geez, Amazon. I don't know if it'd be number two. But I use spreadsheets pretty much every day of my life, even on the weekends. And so giving that up through Microsoft, that would be very difficult for me to do. That would be very difficult. And there was a part of me that was like, for Apple, I don't know, like I've got a computer, I've got the phone, I've got the iPad, I've got the watch. I do their music backup, their photo backup. Like obviously I have an Apple TV. Like they're part of my life. I think I picked them last, which majority of people pick them last, by the way. primarily for the hardware reasons.
That's interesting.
That'd be hard for Google. Not only are you giving up search, you're giving up YouTube, which is huge. That would hurt. I'll be honest. You give up Gmail, which I know some people are like, ugh. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's awesome. We would not be able to do this right now. How about that?
Yeah.
This podcast, we're doing it through a Hangouts, which is Google. So that would happen. I don't see Facebook as super critical, but.
Yeah, I can
maybe not.
I can see the. I mean, I don't know.
Go ahead.
It's a weird question because I feel you. I don't know. I think it's interesting. I looked at the results. I clicked through, and yeah, dropped first was Facebook for most people.
Yeah.
Dropped last was Amazon for most people, which.
Wait, Amazon or Apple?
I mean, Alphabet. Alphabet's at 39%.
Oh, yeah. Alphabet. Okay.
Yeah. Which I agree with that, man. Facebook gets dropped first. Yeah, but this is the New York Times. Like, what do you guys know?
Okay, yeah, at the very bottom, drop first. Yeah, that's right.
22% people said Microsoft. I don't know. That just Facebook's an interesting one because I think that's the only one that like I don't think is there's a solid rationale for where you put that one. That is to me that one makes sense as like a preferential one. But
I'm also it's interesting. Would substitute another company.
It's interesting to me how many people
would at HP people would just laugh at you.
Right? Yeah. I wonder how many. It's interesting to me how many people said that a quarter of people said drop Microsoft first. I'm like, and only 10% said drop Apple first. Well, it's unfair because Facebook is such a dominant. I was about to read into that more than what these statistics can actually tell you. I was going to say, I mean, you just statistically speaking, more people use Microsoft than anything else. So why not? You know, why would people be so willing to drop that? But that's just not true. It's not necessarily what the statistics tell us.
Yeah, it's not as true as it used to be, at least.
Yeah.
Because maybe they're all thinking like you, or like, oh, I could switch over to a browser alternative or Linux. I don't necessarily need Microsoft. But I don't want to give up my iPhone or Android phone.
Yeah.
That would be a hardship. I could see that. Which, you know, again, these are all first world problems. We get it, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, anyways, I thought that was a really interesting article. Just kind of an interesting thought exercise to say, you know, truly who's dominant in your life. And you measure that by saying you have to give one of them up. Who do you want to give up? And it's not easy other than Facebook. But I'd give up Snap pretty fast. I was trying to look at like, it would hurt if someone said give up Dropbox. You know, I use them all the time.
I don't use them much.
That would stink. I'm trying to think. Twitter? Give up Twitter? I'd survive somehow.
You know who wouldn't survive giving up Twitter though, James?
Who?
Carter.
Dude, that guy, life-changing moment.
It had Carter Wilkerson. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. He one day randomly, it was like a Saturday evening or Sunday morning, he tweeted, "Yo, at Wendy's, how many retweets for a year of free chicken nuggets?" And like moments later, they tweeted back to him and said, 18 million, which started the hashtag Nugs for Carter movement. So obviously 18 million is a lot considering the fact that Ellen DeGeneres set the record previously at 3.4 million retweets with her photo at the Oscars 2 years ago. She had kind of held that record. So 18 million would be like fivefold that. So it was a bit of a stretch, and Wendy's knew it. But this week he crossed a pretty amazing threshold, so Wendy's were a bunch of good chaps and decided to just give him the year worth of free nuggets anyways. This week he passed on to Jess, and it is now the most retweeted tweet of all time. It's pretty amazing.
That seems right.
Yeah, it does. Actually, it's hilarious too because Ellen is so friggin' smart when it comes to like grabbing YouTube stars and internet sensations and bringing them on a show. And this was like the perfect endearing, like not too self-obsessed thing for her to do. But she brought Carter on the show and talked about it and tried to like, it basically pumped him up. So her audience, the audience that made that tweet the most retweeted tweet of all time previously, were then like, "Oh, Ellen's so cool. We'll go and retweet hashtag Nugs for Carter's just to help him out." Oh, and yeah, cause like Ellen gave you permission. Yeah, they also said that Wendy's will donate $100,000 to the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption, which is pretty chill of them. Wendy's also confirmed that the team will get his nuggets, but didn't specify how many pieces he'll be allotted per day. which plenty. I know. I'm sure.
Well, I remember someone did the math, right? Like, you just give them a nugget meal for life, and it's going to cost you all of $1,800.
Exactly.
It's not that much.
Yeah. Well, especially because they got like,
oh, we'll make $100,000 donation.
Yeah. Easy. Especially because they got the like, it's like four nuggets per day. Like their smallest thing is four nuggets. That would be out for more than four nugs. Especially because
I don't know. After a while, you'd be like, four's plenty.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Kind of like Chinese torture, you know, just drip, drip, drip.
Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere around August, you'd be thinking, you know, I think I've had enough nuggets. I'm not.
It's been good. But...
You know what I mean? Because you'll have gone like a full 200, 250 days in, and you'll be looking at it thinking, I have another 400 nuggets I have to eat for the rest of the year. I'm not sure I can do this. But yeah, we did it, Internet. We did it.
We did it. I hope this is a foreshadowing of the net neutrality. We did it. Oh, man. Which apparently we broke the internet doing that one, too.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
I like how they claimed it was harder. A DDoS attack when that happened. Oh, like, oh, we were under attack. Or there was an uproar in the internet.
Or you don't watch Last Week Tonight. That could be it too.
Exactly.
Which he did a web update, I think today. Just kind of addressing it, and which is just hilarious all on its own. But apparently the comments like the week up to the vote, which the vote's on the 18th, like they don't consider any of them. So like, so we our site doesn't do it anymore because they don't count. So be patient, and we will. You know, we'll reopen it up when we can. Super weird. But yeah, he showed some clip on where they were, some news anchor was like talking about, yeah, apparently this John Oliver person, and they had Stephen Colbert on the video screen. He was like, what the heck?
That's really funny. Good.
Super funny. But yeah, anyways, nugs for Carter. That's so awesome.
I like it.
That's what's good about the internet. That's everything that's right about it. Something that would die with net neutrality. I don't think so, but who knows? All right. That's the software for the day. Let's talk about hardware for a bit.
All right.
So shall we start with the Echo? Echo, Echo, Echo. So I don't get Amazon sometimes. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
So, like, what, 2 weeks ago, they came out with the Amazon Look.
Right, which is their, like, digital mirror thing.
Takes a selfie of you and gives you a hot or not score or something.
Something like that.
And then, but it doesn't have a screen on it, so you just kind of see it, or it just sees you. I don't know. It's weird. But then today, or this week, last week, they came out with the Echo Show.
Okay.
Which is an Echo with a 7-inch touchscreen, kind of, but it's not really. You're not really supposed to touch it. You're still supposed to talk to it. It just augments the audio. And the screen, yeah, it augments it in a couple ways. So. For example, you might ask Amazon, you know, tell me about the weather. And not only would it verbally tell you about it, it would then show you maybe a 7-day forecast or something like that. And what was another example? If you ask it to shop, like, hey, Amazon, buy some diapers. That's welcome to my world. it would give you results on the screen in addition to telling you what the best deal is. And if you don't want that one, you can just select one.
Which is nice.
And so things like that, where it's just, it makes it more convenient because things are just easier to look at than to hear back visually. Another one is for your daily flash briefing. Like right now, it's all audio. And it's usually like, for me, I've got the TechCrunch show. I've got a Harvard Business Review thought of the day. I've got a devotional and the weather. And so instead of it just being audio, You could also like maybe watch the video of that TechCrunch thing. And so again, kind of augments it, makes it a little better. In addition to that, and this is kind of their big tentpole feature, video calling. So they're replacing your landline officially.
Yeah.
So we're going back to the future. That's what's happening. So the idea being that if you and I have an Echo, I can call you and we just do a video conference. Just boom, just works. And we can look at each other. We can talk, do our thing. And you could also, yeah, just like a video conference, I guess is the way to say it. There's another like super creepy option where it's like called drop-in, I think is what it's called. I don't totally remember. But you whitelist, you allow people to, quote, drop in on your Echo show. So, for example, maybe you put one of these things in your kid's room. You can just drop in. You don't call. You just join. And the person gets like 5 seconds or something to either to say no. and then you join. So if like you're in your kid's room, then you can just see what your kids are doing without them necessarily saying anything. Or maybe you've got some elderly parents and you want to be able to just check in on them. That would be another use case for it. Or whatever, you've got someone who you super trust to just kind of drop in whenever they want. And ideally it's not in the bedroom because that would be is the idea. You can leave messages, I'm guessing. And this actually, the calling is not just with the show, that's with all Echoes and with their new app. So for example, Mr. David Perry and myself, we both downloaded the latest app and got the firmware update. And so we were able to call each other. I can say, Alexa, call whoever it is on my list. He's the only one at the moment. And then it would call him and it'd do a green circle instead of the blue circle. And then he could pick it up either on his app or on any of his Echoes in his house. And then we can chat just like normal. If he's not there, I can leave a message. I can also text a message in the app, and then Alexa will dictate it to him
on
the Echo as well and show him the text. And if I wanted to send him a message, like write him a message, I could actually see what was being written if I was using the show. Otherwise, I would just trust that it sends it properly. So yeah, Amazon's getting into the messenger game, apparently. That's the new thing that everyone gets into.
Trojan horse into your house.
Yeah, so this is their way. They made it very clear to say, yes, it is the same size as a tablet, but it is not a tablet because the thing weighs like 2 pounds.
That's ridiculous.
It's required to be plugged into a wall. But it's essentially a tablet that has still all the other features of Alexa that you know and love.
That's awesome, man. I like it. So
it's $230.
Are you going to get one?
No. No. The issue is where mine's located right now. I don't think it would work very well because mine's just kind of on the living room mantle off in a corner, which is great for listening to music or asking it to do stuff. But for doing a video call, it's just like, it's too far from everything.
Right.
For it to really work. That and everyone I know, hence why Apple's last on my list, is also on Apple. So we just FaceTime or do whatever, and that seems to work just as well.
Yeah, that seems to be the big question here is what's Apple's response going to be to all of this? I don't want to talk about that yet, though. I do want to get there. I don't know. It seems pretty cool. So one of the amazing parts about this is they're kind of looking at expectations of who's going to be where by the end of this year, market share-wise. Amazon is expected to be to have 70% of the voice controlled speaker market this year.
Is that down from last year? Cause I feel like there were 100% last year.
Yeah. Right. Probably, Google Home is looking at 23.8% and other is looking at 5.6%. So that's pretty good if you're Amazon, I guess. Yeah, they're pretty much dominating.
Is that something worth winning? I guess is one question, but I think the answer is yes.
Yes.
But I just don't, like I said, I don't totally get, I mean, I get how Amazon works and why they would do the look and then the show, and they still got this Echo. I don't know. It's the same thing they did with their Kindles, kind of, where they get some initial success and then you create a whole bunch of different versions and flavors of it. And maybe they still expect, I think they expect to sell just a ridiculous amount of Echo Dots, because those are priced to move.
Yeah, I think that's the
super convenient.
I think ultimately that's the point, right? Is it's I think there's an interesting question here in all of this, because they're talking about this market as the voice controlled speaker is what they're defining this as. So your Google Home, your Echo. Now this current one that they just announced also has a screen on it. And what I'm going to ask the question of in a broader sense is what are these? Is there a paradigm for understanding what they are that kind of can tell you how people use them, how they think about them, and where's the best place to go with this technology? Because, you know, Steve Jobs framed the iPhone as a smartphone, but I think it was pretty easy to argue that it wasn't really a smartphone in the sense of how smartphones were defined prior to that. They were really pocket computers. I mean, that's a better example. We've talked about the idea of, you know, what is the Apple Watch? Well, you know, it's one part luxury watch, yes, but more importantly, and one of the things that was important to understand about where Apple was going with it was that really the smartwatches make the most sense in the context of their health trackers with really sophisticated push notifications built into them that happen to have a watch face, you know, that happen to use watches as a stylistic, you know, design language. And so I guess that's the thing that Amazon seems to be kind of trying out here, right? Is what are the different design languages that we can use? And Amazon is kind of like Google and Facebook, where instead of trying to define what that design language should be and then hit that really hard, they're very much a try a bunch of different stuff to see what sticks. And so the voice controlled speaker seems to be sticking, but there also seems to be people who want some sort of a screen interface. And, you know, they don't want to build they don't want it to run Android. That's like a big thing. They don't want this to be an extension of the Android platform. They want this to be their own kind of insular thing, because that gives them a lot more control and power over the information. It doesn't give Google a backdoor into everything. So like the developer part of this is they're sticking with the skills idea, and Echo Show is built to run Alexa skills, the same audio only speaker Echo speakers. Developers will be able to add visual components direct video links to existing skills. So you won't be able to run Amazon's own Fire OS apps. And while Amazon's hardware chief Dave Limp confirmed that Wired that there's no reason services like Netflix and Hulu couldn't build skills to work with the Echo Show, it doesn't seem you'll be able to do that out of the box. So yeah, they're really sticking with this idea of what is this now? Is this like a miniature smart TV? Is this a is this a new type of app platform? Because I guess what my question is there a reason, is there a context that this fits into in the life, into our lives, where Google could kind of pivot with what they're doing with their Google Home, add Android to it, and all of a sudden they'd have a whole bunch of, they'd have an entire, you know, app base that they could throw at it really quickly. Can Apple leverage their Apple TV platform to take advantage of this sort of a space? I don't know. Or is it?
I was reading an article where a guy was talking about, you know, interesting but essentially useless. They will be an interesting footnote in the history of the internet and hardware.
This the Echo Show.
Just these types of devices in general that we're talking about, these voice enabled devices. Which I was like, Jeez, I don't.
What was his argument there?
It sounded like he had talked about it in a different article and was just making his point. Mm. You know, was just reiterating it again, so he didn't dive into it.
Yeah, because that seems dumb to me. I don't think you could predict that at all.
Well, you have problems where it's like, for me, this is the same issue that we've had with Siri. Like, do you use Siri a lot?
Yes.
And if so, what do you use it for? Is it a variety of things, or do you find that it's for like three things that you use over and over?
That's probably the second one.
Yeah, right. Sets timers really well.
I did that earlier today.
Yep. Yep. I use it to send messages.
Yeah, and send messages, make phone calls, like a couple of, you know, task-specific things, get directions.
So you use it even more than I do, which, and I think he makes the argument that that's how all these voice things work. It's funny, for me, I've been thinking about this, and there's something I struggle with Amazon at times, where like I'll enable something new. Like I enabled this new skill. It's this meow app. It's pretty funny. You just go, Alexa, meow, meow. And then it meows at you and you meow back and it meows back at you. And which Eleanor thinks is the funniest thing in the world, which is why the second I heard about it, I was like, oh yeah, she's going to love this. And she does. And I'm setting this up, man. We're going to get a cat someday. And I don't know if I ever phrase this. I'm going to ask to get a cat someday and I'm going to have to break her heart and tell her no.
What?
I'm just hoping I have the strength for it when it happens.
Why do you have to
cats
say no?
Are not welcome at our house. Let's put it that way.
Why is that? I'm curious.
We're a dog family. We're not a cat family.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough.
So both parents have made this decision already. So anyways, that's not the point. The point is, I've been trying to figure out, like, sometimes when you make a new skill, it's hard to remember what it is because they're very exacting. And I figured it out where it's like on your phone, your apps and what you want to do on it. I mean, in some ways it's very much like a multiple choice test where you may not have the complete recall, but if you see the reminder, you go, oh yeah, that's the one. Boom.
Right.
And you tap it and you go. Whereas with voice, they tend to be more open answered test questions.
Right.
You know, where it's like, man, if you don't get a friendly reminder of,
right,
oh yeah, that's the one.
Which
and
is
I find
why
very difficult. Like the more skills I add, honestly, there's ones where I'm like, yeah, I have one. It's really cool. It's about Jeopardy. Alexa, play Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Which I find half the time I get it wrong.
It's funny that reminds me so much of him. I'm trying to get a microcomputer that I have running. I did something dumb and I can't get it to boot normally, so I'm having to do everything through the Linux command line. I've been using Linux for years now. Like occasionally, and like literally every time I have to like look up every command that I need because I can't remember. And that's it's like, I know the order of the commands. I know the general purpose of them, but I can't remember exactly how to spell them. And Linux is really picky about spelling.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of that. It's hard where it's like, I kind of know what I can do. I just don't know specifically how to do it, and I have to, which is why Google and Apple have focused on a small number of skills with a very diverse ways to access it, so that, you know, it, which has its own downside to it.
I want both. Where,
right, exactly. Well, that's the point. It's the downside to it is you tend to learn that it's not very skilled, so you don't try new things. Whereas with Amazon,
what I find is that for whatever reason, on your phone, on a screen, you feel like you get both.
Yes. No, definitely.
Or maybe you just get one way to access it. You tap it. Done.
Right.
You know, and you're okay with that.
Well,
But how you remember it could be like, where was it on the phone? What was the color?
Right.
It could be a notification. There's multiple ways for it to prompt you and remind you, oh, yeah, you have this. That's the other thing. And maybe Amazon or who else has to figure this out. Like, give me notifications of some sort. Give me a reason to use you regularly, like, which on one hand, that also sounds horrible. I can't believe I'm suggesting that. Like, how do you remind me of these things and bring them back into the foreground? I don't know. It's a problem. It's, I guess.
Well, my thought is, it's like if you could get it to be like there's this obvious place where I feel like if we could get there, that it has a perfect solution. If it could, it would have a use case where you could have like a personal secretary that is aware of who you are, what you're doing when you're around in the room. And, you know, it's like, it would be pretty cool to have a personal secretary go, hey, Matthew, by the way, there is a Warriors game today and it starts in an hour. You know, and be like,
oh, yeah, that'd thanks. Be neat.
Or just be like, hey, Matthew, you know, and have it and like an actual secretary, you could tell it, hey, how about you chill out a little bit? Leave me alone right now. And it can learn over time.
What if you just said, that'd be so interesting. I'm okay. All right. You're getting me where it's like, let's go with this Warriors game example where you tell Alexa, remind me of upcoming Warriors games. And it waits until it detects you're inside the house and that you're there. And because presumably with a camera, I can figure that out, right?
Yes.
And then it goes, oh, cool, it's you. And when you walk in, it goes, hey, Matthew, and I like that idea of like getting your attention and saying, want to remind you, got a Warriors game in an hour. And you could either be like, okay, thanks, or tell me later, essentially a snooze it, or, you know, I don't know. Like, you could have different reactions to it. Honestly, with a camera, it'd be nice to even just go, you know, wave your hand, and, you know, just be like, got it, and have it never react to you. That'd be interesting. I also wish, like, and maybe this is where it's headed in the future, where you could be like, yeah, turn on my TV when the game starts. You know, turn it on when the game starts.
Yeah.
And Alexa does that for you. Turns on the TV, gets it to the right channel through magic, and, you know, the game's going. And you could be like, and if I'm not in the room, ping me.
Right, yeah.
You know, that'd be interesting. Or just send you a quick notification.
Yeah, or, you know, turn it on, ping me, and set the DVR to pause so I can just walk back. You know, and the personal secretary thing, I think, is where the voice assistant really becomes an alluring option. And I guess what I'm questioning is, does it make sense with the screen more? Because this is positioned itself as a video phone. Like, that seems to be the primary argument they're making here. It happens to have Alexa built in because Amazon will never make a new piece of hardware without Amazon built in anymore. But this is specifically a video phone for the home. And does that make sense beyond having your...
So feels that way too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the part where you're like, I don't know. I feel like they almost should have downplayed that part, but that's what.
Well, it's one of those things where it reminds me of Steve Jobs pitching the Pocket Mac as a phone. You know, he gave you something very concrete to associate it with, even though that's not really what it was. Like, ultimately, the phone aspect of it is something that got relegated to one app somewhere, maybe in your tray. But really and truly, the most important part of the phone is everything else that it can do. And I wonder if that's Amazon's thing here, was give people a very, very concrete thing that they can do with it. Something that makes it easy to understand.
But it feels so novelty.
Yeah.
Unless have one of those, like, I got little kids or I got elderly parents, which the elderly parents makes more sense than the kids, to be honest.
Well, and
nest camp.
Man, I don't know. I kind of like the idea of, I see, but part of my thing is I'm a big fan of the idea of leaving my phone behind. I want a world where I don't need my phone anymore. And in that context, speakers and screens and cameras everywhere that are aware of who I am and have an internet connection to all of my services is really, really valuable. That allows me to leave my phone behind. Because now I can pick up phone calls and I can talk to you without having to have my phone on me. And because it can pass from Amazon Echo to Amazon Echo, I can walk through my room or walk through my house talking to you. And
that'd be nice. This doesn't do that
yet.
That would be nice. And that's the other, I think that's the other thing that's killing me is this feels like a 60% of the way there for 60% of the way there product. And it just reveals all the shortcomings because of the cool stuff it does. And I find myself going, oh my gosh, it's almost awesome. It's cool.
Yeah.
But it's almost life changing and it's not quite there.
So I do think that the ability to pass conversations from device to device is like incredible.
That's a big deal.
And have it be able to do it, you know, and the more automatic it is, the better. The more
and it's not it repeating just, it in every single room. It's just, whatever room you're in.
Yeah.
It knows that.
And the entire network of Amazon dots in your house, they're all listening to you talk. So if you get louder, if you leave one and approach another one, they're both hearing the same conversation. So the one that can hear you best becomes the one that's talking to you because it just assumes, oh, you're closer to this one or you're facing this one or whatever. You know, I think that you could easily do that sort of a thing. And they should do that sort of a thing. I think that that's the direction we'll go. And then there's the other piece of this that I remember years ago before I had, you know, a smartphone that I basically sleep with. One of the things that I wanted was I wanted a really, really sophisticated alarm clock. At the time, this was years and years ago, obviously. But I had an alarm clock and my alarm clock had like, it had like five different time settings that you could set, but I wanted the alarm clock app that you have on your phone, but in an alarm clock, you know, frame, it would sit on a desk. It would display the time. It would display other information and stuff.
Okay.
And that's the other thing that I think this becomes is sort of like the highly functional alarm clock, the informational thing that just displays everything you need to know. I think in that context that you could happen to be able to talk to. I think in that context is another, it makes sense for it to have a screen. I don't know. One of the things I'm most excited about Apple showing their competitive product off, at WWDC is,
you think so?
Oh yeah.
They almost don't have a choice now.
I almost. The room reel's pretty hot with it. It seems pretty likely. And if they do, they're going to have to, one of the things that Steve Jobs really, really emphasized was this idea of have a context, have a way to frame it. And sometimes changing the context is the way that is how you can kind of sneak in. And they're very transparent about what the point of their devices they think they are. And this is like this brings me back to the Apple Watch, that modern Apple without Steve Jobs still does this very well of defining what the use case of this device is supposed to be. And it'll be interesting how they describe their version of this. What is it? Is it a digital assistant? Is it a super sophisticated alarm clock? Is it a, you know, is it the modern day hardline phone? You know, what the heck is this device? And, you know, because it's pretty crazy that Apple to this day doesn't have a FaceTime video option built into Apple TV. And that just seems like such an obvious.
I agree.
How did that not? That still blows my mind. I guess I shouldn't be that shocked from.
Because they framed it wrong is what happened.
Yeah, and that is part of it. Once they frame something, they're not very good at readjusting to it. That was something that Steve Jobs was great at, was just, you know, standing up a year later and saying, you know, some people said we should have made this thing last year the way that we made it, but that was stupid. And you're like, you're the one who said it. You can't say somebody.
Well, I mean, you think about like when they first launched the phone, they didn't have the App Store.
Yeah.
And they readily admit like, yeah, we missed that one.
Well, and you
know, but they were good about admitting it and moving on.
Other employees were good about admitting it. Steve Jobs in the first year one was like, obviously nobody wants apps. The future is HTML web apps and that's the direction we're going to go. And then the next year,
you have
year,
to say that until you come out.
Say, well, and then and well, and according to internally, according to people, he was adamant about that. And it wasn't until they got a lot of pressure to open up an app store and they got a chance to develop it. And then the next year, they were like, he actually had a complete 180 on whether or not it should be completely web-based or if there should be native applications. And after his 180, he acted like anybody who suggested it should just be web apps was dumb.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that was some job. I mean, that was Jobs, but it was his ability to do that and do it with a straight face and convince everybody that yes, this makes sense, that allowed him to pivot and make complete 180s and yet have it still feel like you weren't getting ripped off. Like, oh yeah, this is rational. I don't know. I wonder how Apple's gonna, because I sit there and I go, it's too expensive. I don't have $300 to throw at this thing, but I kind of like it. I would prefer this most, I think, of all my options for an Echo if I were gonna get
even
one.
Over a Google Home.
If I were gonna get an Echo, if I were gonna tap into that ecosystem, so I could make phone calls with all my peeps.
Yeah, maybe if I was buying a new one today, maybe. I don't know. I'm not unhappy with my Echo. So I'm not. It's very rare that I'm like, man, I really wish I just had a screen on here. If I want a screen, I open the app. You know, that's honestly, and that's how I go. A lot of times, you know, getting back to that thing of like, I'll go, there's a skill that does this. And I'll open it up and there's a My Skills section and I'll scroll through and go, oh, yeah, that's the one. And then I'll say it. You know, which,
yeah,
probably defeats the purpose probably significantly, but
And honestly, if Google were to do this, I think I'd be most interested in that and set up a couple of Chromecasts, because I think that to me is even more powerful. If it's like a mini screen to sort of give you a little, you know, they've got this picture of CNN playing. It'd be great to be able to be like, okay, now put it on the big screen TV. You know, hey Matthew, by the way, the Warriors game is going on. Do you want to watch? Oh yeah, open it up. And it opens it up and it shows me the score. I'm like, oh man, turn this on this TV. You know, that's something that Google has the hardware and software infrastructure to let you do.
And they seem to have the heart for it too.
Yeah.
Like they also go, yeah, that would be cool. Let's do that.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll worry about the business model later.
Yeah, exactly. What do you mean make money?
Right. We got a search engine.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, exactly. Look, this just gives us more information about the people. That's all we need.
Yeah. So here's another interesting thing. So it turns out that there is a startup whose name is Nucleus. They came out with a device that has a 7-inch screen, can do video calls, integrates Alexa. It's made for your home. Sound familiar yet? It's pretty much the Echo Show.
Okay.
To which, you know, it's normal. Big companies see what little companies are doing, think it's a cool idea, and, you know, copy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Facebook.
Yeah, right? Turns out, though, care to guess who one of their primary investors is?
I'm going to guess Amazon/Bezos.
Yeah, Amazon's Alexa Fund. They raised $5.6 million.
It's one of those classic, see, I told you it was a good idea.
Yeah, but they're also like, why did Amazon not just buy them? To which the title was, hey, Walmart, here's the startup you should buy so you can start competing with Amazon. Yeah.
That's really funny. That'd be rough.
Yeah, and their letter about it was, it said they made a statement, I guess, saying they've been working closely with Amazon since 2014. And just last September, they announced the Series A round led by the Alexa Fund. So they probably didn't do the whole thing. They go, however, the larger question here is, should retailers and developers be wary about partnering with larger corporations like Amazon? The direction that Amazon is taking is a step backwards for the Alexa ecosystem and innovation overall. But more importantly, we have wide-ranging repercussions across many different and seemingly unrelated industries. Imagine the impact of other retailers of Amazon having their shopping carts in every room of a home. But we have a team, blah, 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 blah. And, so understandably upset and are saying, hey, you're going to make other developers, a little skittish, which one of them was that you don't get too invested in a big company, essentially, if you're a startup, which bummer for those guys.
There's been a couple of companies that have been learning that lesson from Apple this last couple of months.
Snap's done it too.
They'll actually
be talking about it. They all do it, I guess.
Yeah, all the big companies do it. It's pretty rough, man. I'm trying to think of when Google has done that. If they've done that, they're better about hiding it. They're not quite as blatant at just like ruining their partners when they're too small. But they'll come in and it's funny. What Google will do is they'll buy a company who's like critical infrastructure for somebody else and then just shut it down. Dude, what the heck? Why'd you buy them if you're going to just shut them down? They're like, decided no.
Which is kind of an awesome way to compete. And then later this fall, Microsoft's coming out with another Windows 10 update.
Yeah.
And on it, it's going to have Home Hub. And the idea behind that is you would have a desktop computer. I don't know. 7-inch screen that has an always-on screen that has things like a shared calendar, some shared apps. You would be able to control smart devices using Cortana through Windows, which I think is super smart. And to-do lists, calendars, notes, that kind of thing. It's designed for like kitchen PCs. Sound familiar?
Yes.
Microsoft's going to get in the game too.
There was a YouTube video of a guy. He created a... have you seen those videos of the holographic projections of like Tupac, like performing quote unquote live? So he built a miniature one of those that lived on his desk. And so he could project holograms into it. And he hacked into... You can use Cortana and build it into apps and stuff. And so he built like this parser that would basically go and communicate with Cortana. So you could talk at it and then it would act as this intermediary between Cortana. And then he had his wife do a bunch of motion capture stuff and he used those animations with the Cortana model from the Halo games, the actual 3D model. They put a camera on it that does face tracking. What it allows them to do basically is have a hologram, a full on hologram of Cortana standing there talking to him. He can talk at it. It can show him information. And because it is face tracking, like Cortana can keep track of you and watch you as you like walk around the room. It was like,
that's cool.
Somebody needs to snap this guy up real quick and build that into something because that's a pretty neat way to do this. That would be such a cool interface opportunity too. Because you can have the screens and everything. Oh man, that'd be neat. I want that full on holographic digital assistant. There's no way it would take over your house and try to kill you.
Nah, you're fine.
Does sound like a horror movie though. If I'm not mistaken, Microsoft made that announcement about their future Amazon Echo competitor around the time that they were making a couple other announcements. They had like two big announcement things this week. They had the Microsoft's Build event and and then something else later in there. We'll just get into it. So Microsoft had a blend analysis. And this was the biggest announcements from their build event. They're doing all sorts of stuff. Number one, they're doing a Windows 10 fall creator update. And this one's all about like 3D animations and video editing and stuff like that. They're really trying to get into that. They're also coming up with a new visual design. They're moving away from Metro and they're coming up with a, what's it called? At Build, Joe Belafort introduced. Introduced design. That's the Fluent Design. That's what the name is. An evolution from the current Windows interface that focuses on light, depth, material, and scale. That's the kind of normal mumbo jumbo that the designer
stuff.
Yeah. They showed off Story Remix, which is their new video editing software. It kind of competes with like iMovie Maker, and everybody says it's pretty great. Story Remix takes your media, photos, and videos from your smartphone, for example, and turns them into instant video stories. Microsoft says Story Remix can produce a video that feels professional and with just minutes of work. You can be as hands-on as you want. Advanced 3D features are supported or let you do almost everything to make memorable content out of the memories that you feed into it. So
that sounds cool.
Yeah. So if you're a Windows user, that'll be coming direct to you, which is pretty neat. It's getting more powerful. They also talked about their stylus. They want pens everywhere. At the fall creators update, Microsoft is working to eliminate any remaining friction for using it across the entire system at all times. You'll be able to use the pen to scroll and interact throughout Windows, and the company has built PDF animations right into the Edge browser. PDF annotations, not animations, right into the Edge browser. If you love the pen, Microsoft wants to make it so you'll never put it down, which... Yeah, I guess. Like you said, not having to have a stylus was such an advantage in so many ways. And for a couple of use cases where if you're somebody who needs a pen because you're an artist or something, it seems like that's a step forward for you. For everybody else, it's like not having to use a pen is one of the advantages of touchscreens. But okay, you do you, Microsoft. They also announced new motion controllers. So everybody with a VR ecosystem has to have motion controllers nowadays. These look like really ugly versions of... These are actually particularly ugly versions of that design. I'm not exactly sure what's going on. The controllers, which have numerous LEDs running around them, will be fully tracked by sensors in the headset itself rather than relying on external cameras or other equipment, which is pretty huge because most of the motion...
That's an interesting idea.
Most of the motion trackers... full motion tracking that's been done for your hands have required the Vive basically has those lighthouses that act as your markers for where you are in the room. Facebook's thing, what's it called? The Oculus has a camera that can track it. Your PlayStation has a camera that can track it. You have some sort of an outside thing that allows you to track your hands in real time. But Microsoft has been really pushing the idea that instead of doing the outside in tracking, which that everything else falls under, they're doing the inside out. So all the tracking happens in the headset itself, which requires no external markers, no external cameras or anything. But that does make it more challenging for the hands because there's, how do you track your hands that way? And this is their solution. So it's pretty neat that they've come up with it and really smart that they did, because not being able to use your hands in VR is kind of lame. It's a real limitation, honestly. So that's pretty big that they came out with that. And then the last thing that's worth mentioning,
that is cool.
Was that iTunes is coming to the Windows Store.
That's right. It'll be available in Windows 10S.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This is a pretty huge announcement because, like, we talked about Windows 10S last week and how they're moving to a Windows Store only. So getting companies to bring things to the Windows Store is going to be really important for the success of that ecosystem. And iTunes is a dominant media system, so if it doesn't got iTunes, it's not really a full system, and now it does, which is pretty cool. It's cool of Apple. It's probably a piece of cake. Like, I'm sure Microsoft have their way to be like, look, Apple, just submit it to the store. We'll do the rest. Let us port it. And it's funny. I wonder how much cooperation, how much work Apple actually had to do above and beyond what they already do for it to get it into the App Store, or if Microsoft understands how important it is to a huge amount of their customer base. And we're like,
well, I think they've bought a lot of goodwill, because they bring all their apps over to iOS.
That's
now.
True.
And so I think there's a part of a, dude, we're playing nice. Just play nice back.
Yeah.
And I don't think Apple sees them as a threat at the moment.
Yeah, that's, I think that's as big a deal as any of it. So kind of going further down that road, though, what can run on your computer? There was a couple of big announcements this week. Number one, Microsoft did a demonstration of Windows 10 apps, like stuff that you would have running on Intel chipset, running on ARM microprocessors, which is a giant deal because the fundamental computer language computer speaks, your machine code is an instruction set. And it's a number of super simple tasks that the processor can do, and all applications can boil down to this instruction set. And the Intel instruction set is really fundamentally different than the ARM instruction set. And the ARM instruction set are the devices that are the chips that are used in literally all smartphones and a whole lot of embedded systems, Internet of Things type stuff. So if you want Windows, and this has been a real struggle for Microsoft over the years to be able to have, they've got really powerful applications that have been built for Windows, but they won't run on anything but Intel. And this week they demonstrated that they can do that. And it should give them the ability to, as you said, they've bought a lot of goodwill with, as they're trying to expand their empire. They've announced that they're like, they're giving up on smartphones, on building smartphones. They just want Microsoft services and Microsoft applications everywhere. They want every single device.
Makes sense.
To run, what's it called? The office suite sort of, you know, and stuff like that. But it would be even better for them to be able to run Windows on a Snapdragon processor, which is one of your, you know, one of the biggest selling processors for a smartphone. If they can get Windows to run on that and to get applications that were written for Intel machines to run on it, that'd be a huge deal. And that's what they did. It just gives them a lot of portability and that sort of Microsoft at every level thing that they've been going for, that you can have everything from embedded devices and smartwatches all the way up to servers, and it'll work. This is such a Satya Nadella thing too. Because he's a cloud guy. He's a guy who thinks that servers are really important, and Microsoft's business in the cloud, which is huge business, doesn't run primarily on Intel, doesn't run primarily on Windows. It runs on Linux. It runs on ARM microprocessors. So I think he's made that a top priority, get the engineers to get that working. And I think we were seeing the fruits of that labor.
which is exciting for them. Speaking of Linux, they also announced this week that there are three distributions of Linux that are going to be coming to the Windows Store. So last year they announced...
What does that mean?
So they got onto like the Linux Foundation, which was a huge deal. They've been open source.
Yeah, I remember that.
They've been really becoming friendly with it. But if you wanted to run Linux, Ubuntu is a very popular version of Linux, for example. If you wanted to run Ubuntu, I run Ubuntu on my work computer sometimes. But what that requires me to do is set up a virtual machine and then load Ubuntu into it and basically run Ubuntu as a virtual computer on top of my Windows computer. This streamlines that process, which is great for two reasons. Number one, there's quite a bit of hassle in setting up a virtual machine. Nowadays, it's pretty straightforward, but it's not like double clicking on an icon and opening up the app. It's more complicated than that. This means having them in the App Store means that it will be that simple. And the other part of it is
interesting
that Windows is supporting it more and more natively, which allows these distributions to have to virtualize less and less of what they're trying to do, and it allows it to run faster and perform at a higher level. And so the three
So what's Microsoft's advantage for enabling that?
The whole idea there is...
Like, do they attract developers that way? Is that kind of their thing?
Yeah, so one of the reasons why Google and Amazon and a lot of your super high-tech companies buy so many Apple computers is because although OS X is quite a bit different than Linux, a lot of your command line stuff, a lot of your applications, they work, if not exactly the same, they work very similarly on both platforms. So let's say you're a mean stack developer. You are somebody who you're somebody who writes all JavaScript, which means basically what that means is you use Mongo databases, you use Node.js, Node JavaScript to run everything on the computer. You have an Express server, so your entire internet server runs in Express, and then it pushes out an Angular web page. In order to do that on Windows is a hassle. In order to do that on Linux or OS X is like one or two lines of code in the terminal. The difference between those two things has been really great. And since everything that you push to the internet is going to live on a Linux server, you don't necessarily want to develop on a Linux computer because there are instabilities and disadvantages. It's Linux. That's the reason why you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You want a fully supported, great operating system. But you want something that is as close to a Linux operating system as possible for you to develop on. So developers pick Mac. And now that Satya Nadella is in charge and isn't pushing Windows Server as the primary product that they're pushing, it's primarily Linux servers. They recognize that not only do they want people to be hosting their stuff on their Linux servers, they want them to be developing on Windows. And that means making Ubuntu or making Linux run really well on Windows. That way developers don't have to make a choice between the amazing number of tools that you can get on a Windows computer and the friendly developer environment of a Mac.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and that's the advantage there. And I think this is one of those things where you won't necessarily see sales really pick up over the course of the next year or two. But I think I think you'll see it pay dividends and really push Microsoft back into being, I don't know if they'll ever be number one again, but it will definitely get them out of that being, second company you delete after Facebook. they want to get above Amazon, I think, is that goal. They want to be number three company, maybe number two company that you delete. And at this point, I think that this is how they do it. They become really, really friendly to developers. And
if you can get in with the really the highly creative people and the high powered developers, that sets your brand as a brand for as an aspirational brand. And if you have an aspirational brand along with a product lineup that sells $200 computers, that's pretty huge. that's how you get back to your glory days, which is what when Microsoft was dominant, what they did. They not only did they have cheap computers, but they had the most powerful computers, the computers that developers wanted to use, the computers that creative people wanted to use because they were the most powerful computers. And Apple has stolen a lot of their...
That's an interesting thing. I've never actually really thought about that before, where part of what attributes part, because I mean, let's be honest, their Mac sales still aren't huge, but part of what attributes to their success and staying power is the fact that the internet happened.
Yeah.
And they just happen to be well placed for developing for, you know, Linux, whereas Microsoft wasn't. Obviously, Microsoft's not, it's not dead. It's not going anywhere. Tons of companies still use them. But that's interesting that that helped. That was an Apple got lucky, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, they didn't do that on. They did
just it. Like ARM in a way.
Yeah, honestly, that's it's really funny. Those are both. I've been watching a bunch of videos about the history of ARM, and there's a lot of similarities in those two companies where they just sort of they made choices that weren't even necessarily good business decisions at the time, but were just kind of forced into, well, I guess we'll do it this way.
Yeah, they weren't even necessarily like, wow, it was real visionary. We're going to suffer now, but in 5 years, the internet's going to happen and that'll be great. Like, that wasn't it either.
Yeah. No, they based it off of Linux because it was easy and it made it easier to develop their own ecosystem. They knew it was a bad idea. They knew it was short-sighted, but it was the only thing they could do. And it just so happened to be the exact opposite. But it was complete coincidence. They didn't know that. If they could have done it differently, they would have.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, ARM's fascinating because they started developing their RISC instruction set thinking that they were just going to kind of poke around with it, but Intel was going to realize how good of an idea it was and would just destroy them in within a couple of years of them developing it. And nobody else looked at it. And it just sort of languished there as a product for years and years and years until Apple said, oh, hey, what's this? With the Newton, actually. And then it was still another like decade and a half before it really took off as a product. But yeah, interesting history there. And so they also made some announcements about their mixed reality stuff. So the big one is if you're in the market for some VR stuff, you want it cheap, you want it effective, and you don't own a PlayStation, then your best bet is to go with Acer.
That's me.
Acer has actually, your best bet is probably to go with HP because they announced one too. but theirs is a little more expensive, so...
figures.
Yeah, so Acer will release.
I had a rough week last week. Okay, I'm not exactly in love with my company.
Fair enough. Yeah. So you can get the new VR headset and the new motion controllers for a mere $399 during the holiday season. They're going on pre-order right now. Yeah, like I said, Hewlett-Packard is the other company that is announcing it. Microsoft, it showed off an early version of the headset at CES, and the development kit without the controller will sell at $299 this summer with pre-orders opening today. And this is all inside-out tracking, so they got cameras on them, so they don't need external sensors. They'll work with their Move controllers. And the other big thing is that they're kind of emphasizing the idea that this, along with a low price, could make it a more convenient option for people who aren't interested in the often intensive setup of desktop VR
currently required.
That's true. Yeah. Relatively speaking, it's pretty affordable.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not because the Vive is still a $700 headset after your $1,500 computer. And it's an expensive adventure to start down. And then you need a giant room that's dedicated to it. Whereas this is very much now we'll make it easy on you sort of situation. And yeah, a little more flexible.
Seems smart.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. Seems smart. One of the interesting things about it, though, I was reading a review of a guy who got to use the Acer headset, and he was basically complaining about the term mixed reality and how Microsoft uses it. Microsoft, I think, smartly has said, this echoes what we've talked about, the idea that there really isn't virtual reality and augmented reality. Those are just two ends of the same spectrum of mixed reality, is how they describe it.
Okay.
And because I think when we think mixed reality, we assume that there's real world stuff coming into it. You know, like maybe you're overlaying, maybe it's like the HoloLens. And the truth is, that's not what mixed reality means to Microsoft. Hmm. And the guy who used it was like, this is just a VR headset. And Microsoft's just like, no, it's mixed reality. It's like, yeah, but there's no actual reality coming in. It's all virtual reality.
No, it's virtual for your face, but for your hands, it's real.
Exactly. Yeah, so...
I get it. I'm Team Microsoft on this one.
I know. It's, well, it's... The reason why I'm nervous about it is because it confuses the
two. Besides, who cares? Apple's going to come out with something and they're going to call it, you know, this is Retina reality. Whatever.
What was the name I was going to throw out there too? Retina reality.
We should trademark that one quick.
Yeah. it's a virtual force touch. It's interesting. This is one of the things that theoretically they've been talking this Acer can do, because it does the inside out tracking. That means it's aware of the world around it to at least distance sensing, which means that it could actually create a VR world based on the world you're standing in. So if there's a desk in your way, it can add a virtual object,
put an object there
the size of the desk, so you don't walk into it.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. And
stop people from leaning back on things that aren't there.
I think back to that video of that little girl like looking at the desk and stretching to look at the desk and then lean on the desk and just face planting with that spot. Oh my gosh. Oh, it's so brutal.
Exactly.
But yes, correct. You don't have to worry about that anymore, thankfully.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. But so, yes, that's where we are with this. Acer, they did not demo that technology, unfortunately, during this demo, but it should be capable of that. It's really neat. I mean, I'm pretty happy with my setup right now, but who knows, man? Maybe I'll get crazy. Maybe I'll jump. I think the big news here is that kind of realize that $800 price point is ridiculous. Not everybody's going to buy it, so they're trying to figure out how to bring it down and bring it into the real world. And yeah, it's a big week for Microsoft. Did some cool stuff.
That's what I appreciate about Microsoft is, like, they very much push into the how do we make this cheaper?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not necessarily as good or better, just cheaper.
Yeah.
And for things like this, you're like, man, that might be okay.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting. Yeah. Especially because they're doing it 2 years later. And, you know, I know we keep talking about how Moore's Law has ended and things are slowing down. But really and truly, there have been some huge changes in the last 2 years already that really make it so that, we can make these high resolution screens cheaper. We're better at understanding what needs to be done here. Those holo processing units, or whatever they call them, HPUs,
that do the inside out tracking are already getting better. And if you're using the old HoloLenses, those are way worse than what we're going to be launching at the end of this year. And they're making giant progress really, really quickly in this area. So it's not ridiculous. If $400 device today is going to be better than the $400 device that PlayStation launched last year, and substantially so. And I think we're going to get to see that really ramp up, where in 2 or 3 years, a $300-$400 VR headset will actually be a really, really high quality experience. And Microsoft wants to be there when that price point gets there.
Right.
Which is great for the market, you know. Yeah. I don't want to get too distracted by VR stuff, but I think it drives me crazy that there's not engineering software out there already for it. That's me. See what I'm working on at real scales, but whatever. I need to start a Kickstarter. Start a company. Get some VCs.
Dude, that sounds like fun.
It would be fun.
No, I can't. I'm supposed to say no. I can't. I'm sorry.
But James.
Jesse was like, you just need to admit that you have a problem, that you can't say no to things, and that will help you say no to things. So I've done that a couple times now. I'm like, just so you know, my kryptonite is the word no. I can't handle it.
It's fun. I've gotten
only till you're in the middle of it.
I'm pretty good at saying no. Oh no, that's not true. I'm really good at not saying no, but just acting as though I said no.
There you go.
Oh yeah. I'll totally do that for you when I get around to it, whenever that is. That's not probably.
I've had to read stuff on the creative, like how to say no without actually saying no. Like one great tip is the pass off.
Yeah.
Of saying, you know, I can't do this, but this person over here might be able to help you with it.
Oh, now, that's. Oh, you know what the best thing to do? Oh my gosh. This is the most wonderful thing to get to say no to people is to say, I can show you how to do that. I'd be happy to support you and teach you how to do that.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they know that they're the ones that are actually going to have to do the work, even though you're offering your full-throated support of them, and they'll now we know how bad they really want it. You know, it's like, it's funny. I've actually had friends who have taken me up on that, and I've invested a lot of time and money into their projects because they wanted to learn. And I said I said yes to that. But, you know, I find it very difficult to just take on projects for people. Be like, even if there's going to be a great payoff at the end. But you know who does want you to say yes to them, James?
And who apparently says yes to every single project ever.
Oh, my gosh. This guy is ridiculous.
He has a problem saying
no. Oh, man, oh, man.
We're talking about the infamous Musk of Elon.
I don't even have any articles to talk about it, but you brought it up, so I'm going to talk about it. Like, it went from, is the whole Boring Company thing a joke, like a month and a half ago, to they have miles of tunnels drilled, and they're testing out the transport system. Like, what is...
Yeah, you seem to happen really fast. Well, I love their thing of, like, we're just going to dig these holes 10x speed as normal. Like, whoa, that should make some progress.
Yeah, that'd be good. Well, you know what? You know what I think happened? I think they've actually been working on this for, like, a year. I think they've actually been working on this for a long time. And they've been doing it in stealth mode, though. They just haven't told anybody that they're doing it. They haven't shared it with anybody. And they finally got to the point where, like, Elon, we are taking delivery of a boring tool. It will be in our parking lots next month. Everybody's going to want to know what we're doing. You can't just, we got to say something at this point. And he's probably like, okay,
I'll go to Instagram. Trust me.
That would have been awesome had he not said anything. They're like, what is
that? Oh my gosh. Oh.
And he just goes, oh, we're boring tunnels. And anyways, odd about space travel.
Oh, you know, like, honestly.
Time's out.
or honestly, he likes the limelight. He clearly likes the limelight and the attention. But if he wanted just an if he wanted to be overrun with everything, what he should have done was taken delivery of the boring tool. And then when everybody asked, what's that? He should have just been like, nothing. And then, and then when they start to bore a hole in the ground, it should have been, what are you doing? You'd be like, what do you mean?
What are you talking about?
And just not told anybody.
just be like, he could just be like, this has nothing to do with SpaceX or Tesla.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just put up a big, you know, it's like Apple's car project, right? Like, we know more about Apple's car project because they put up the stupid, like, oh, this isn't an Apple building. We have proof right here that you own this building. Yeah, but it's not Apple employees. Right. We have a list of the Apple employees. We know you're recruiting for cars. That would have been, he should have just put up like a chain link fence. The one was like really shabby, like curtains. Like attached to it, so you could just like stand on your tippy toes and look over and fly drones. Anyways, he's going nuts. That's not what we wanted to talk about. So Tesla today, this week, said that they really want your data. They want it all, like every company.
Give us all your data now. Yeah,
but specifically, they want your driving video stuff. When it comes to,
they're not already collecting that.
Not all of it. Huh. It depends. There are contexts like you. So they have the assisted driving on the highways and stuff. But when the car's not engaged, they're not recording your data. And if you haven't paid for the upgrade, they're not recording your data. But they're basically, they come out this week and said, look, to build self-driving cars, it would be really helpful to have all of the data for your car.
I agree.
We would have videos and we would have locations. We would have what you were doing in the car, how you were turning the wheel. Like basically, you know, everything that we need to be able to control in order to control the car, we want that data, but from you. And
I'm kind of surprised they weren't already collecting it. So yeah, honestly, this is smart.
Yeah, but they got to get permission, and so they've announced that they want drivers to give them access to all of it. And honestly, with a lot of this machine learning stuff, it's having giant data sets is really, really important to getting accurate models. And so, especially from the ability to like read car signs and stuff, this isn't like the one dude, what was his name? Comma.io or whatever his name. The guy who like developed his own self-driving car in a weekend it wasn't a weekend, but it was a couple of months, and it was using pretty sophisticated neural networks. And then the DMV came to him and were like, yeah, how about you not do that without a permit? but he's basically doing Tesla's not doing something as AI first as he was. They have a lot of code on the back end that they is handwritten, and it's not just neural networks being trained. But they also have, but like all of their image processing stuff is done with neural networks
today.
Yeah, exactly. All of their image process. Basically, what happens is they have radar and they have cameras in their cars that are recording all sorts of information. The neural networks take that and process it. And they return to the main algorithm that's actually controlling the car and says, hey, this is what's around you. And this is our confidence of what's around you. This is where it is. This is what it is. This is a street sign. It says 35 miles per hour. I'm 90% sure of that. And then the car, based on that information, will be like, okay, since we're sure that it's, you know, since we're that sure that this is the speed, we'll decrease our speed to 35. Or, you know, there's an object in the road. I don't know what it is, but it's right there. And the car will be like, well, okay, we'll slow down then and not hit it. And that's kind of, that's how it works, you know, that give and take. But having that information and being able to build up even more databases, also they'll have the location of the car, which allows them to effectively crowdsource the mapping of roads in incredibly high detail. It just gives them a tremendous amount of information with all sorts of metadata that's really useful for developing the systems. And that is a huge advantage that Tesla has over everybody else if they can get access to the data. So hopefully,
they'll probably get a lot.
I'm sure they will. And even if they don't get it, you know, even if they only get a small percentage of it, that's still an enormous amount of data, more than a lot of their competitors have. Because most of their competitors only, you know, Apple has three cars
on their own fleets.
Exactly. Apple has three cars on the road. Uber has 60 cars on the road, or whatever, 30 or whatever it is. But compared to the number of Teslas on the road, if you could only get 10% of the Model 3s to agree, that's an enormous fleet of cars that are giving you all sorts of information. And as their fleet grows, they'll get even more and more of this data to process and look at. That being said, the champion right now in miles driven autonomously is Waymo, Google's.
By a way lot.
Yeah, right? So they have this video that they released on Twitter showing the number of miles driven as a function of time. And it starts in 2009, and you watch it grow through 2009, early somewhere between then and now. In June 2015, they hit 1 million miles. October 2016, they hit 2 million miles. May 2017, they hit 3 million miles. And if you're not familiar with how logarithmic time flows, let me tell you, that's logarithmic growth right there. That's pretty huge. And so you get that really steep incline. And it's a consequence of the fact that they're growing their fleet like crazy, getting ready to deploy in Utah and more and more. Adding 100 autonomous minivans to the fleet seems to have accelerated things, because the project logged 1 million miles in the last 7 months alone. Waymo's self-driving cars seem to be getting safer as they drive more miles, too. Data released by the California DMV in February showed a huge drop in the number of times that Waymo's human engineers had to take control of the self-driving cars. That increases in safety likely played a key role in the company's recent decision to start offering rides in autonomous minivans in and around Phoenix, Arizona. There was a change that was made. Oh, well, it was under Uber, or sorry, not Uber. Well, it was, that was a heck of a Freudian slip. While it was part of Google as opposed to its own company, they spent more than a year publishing monthly reports on the progress, including detailed accident reports. Since becoming Waymo, the project has shifted to releasing information in scattershot blogs, posts on Medium. But yeah, that's pretty huge. They have two accidents that have been caused by the self-driving cars, and they were both super low speed like things. And we've talked about this before, that Waymo doesn't judge their safety by the number of accidents they have, because it's a meaningless statistic, because they have so few of them. They judge them by disengagements, where the engineer takes over because the car was doing something unsafe and they decided they had to intervene.
Or didn't know what to do.
Yeah, and actually that's the most common thing nowadays is what we were just talking about. There's something in the middle of the road. It can't identify what it is or what to do about it. And so the driver has to take over and figure out how to get around it. I don't have this data. I wish someone else would have done the research for me so I could just say it. But it would be really interesting to compare, you know, how many accidents per million miles there are for the average accidents per mile driven. Give it to me. Transportation safety, United States. Historical trends. Jeez. I was hoping it would just boom, be there. U.S. vehicle miles traveled and population fatality rates. Vehicle miles, 300 billion. What? That's not really useful. This is great radio, James. I can't find it. Doesn't matter.
All right.
But the numbers are a lot higher. The point is that very few people drive a million miles in their lifetime, and yet many people get into accidents. So the number of accidents per mile driven is quite large, compared to this. And so it's crazy because at this point, Waymo is already significantly safer than a human driver.
Which is Elon's point of, like, you have a moral obligation to release your product because you'd be saving lives.
Yeah. And that number, I mean, realistically, is only going to continue to grow. The number and grow at a higher and higher rate for a while. Eventually it'll hit some sort of, I don't know. Maybe it'll never stop growing exponentially, James. So on into eternity. I'll start driving through space to get it up into those really high miles. But so it's pretty huge. Pretty big deal for Waymo. Self-driving cars, man, they're coming, whether you like it or not. And I like it.
Also coming down the pipe are touch sensors.
Yeah.
There's this cool research done at Carnegie Mellon University. They figured out a way to turn pretty much any surface into a touchpad.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, doing using a couple different things, but probably the coolest one is spray paint. They get conductive spray paint. Okay. And like put it on anything, and then you could paint over it just like normal.
Whoa.
And then add some electro fields, you know, electric field things to it, and you can figure out where people touch. And so they showed off a ton of different examples. Like one of them was actually that this was super cool. You could 3D print something, paint it, and add some of these electrodes, and boom, you have a touch sensor now just built into it. It said it also, for whatever reason, it works with Play-Doh and it's like natively conductive.
I'll do it.
Which is interesting.
Salt. It's got to be salt. I don't know why. I don't have any idea what it is.
I don't know. But then they showed this really cool one, actually, where it was a spray paint. They said they spray painted a wall. They just rolled on a wall. And then they did the regular latex paint on top of it. And they connected it to the light switch. And so they're like, all you do is you touch the wall. And it turns the light on and off. You drag your hand down the wall. It dims it. It brightens it.
That's pretty... Because I was going to say, just to make everything a conductive surface so you can, like, touch it is okay. But to me, it's like if there's actual, like... Touching different parts of the walls will do different things. Like it were a giant touch sensor. Like, that's where
that's what it is. It's a giant touch sensor.
Multi-field.
Did I not say that right?
Oh, you did. I'm thinking of the touch lamps where you just touch them and they turn on.
Oh, no.
Those are not nearly as good. They're not as much fun. And
no. This is like, think,
like the screen of your phone.
They call those things. I think the screen on your phone, maybe not multi-touch, but just regular touch, and maybe someday multi-touch, or like the touchpad on your laptop, like that. But
yeah, trackpad.
Big. Trackpad. Thank you. Yes, trackpad.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, think like that. And so, so like another example they had is they spray painted a guitar and then made different zones do you know how like usually you have like the controls on the ground to change the sounds on it?
Yeah.
They're like, no, we can put those right on the guitar now. And no one else sees it except for you, you know, or you just have to know where it's at. And there's a really cool video that'll be on the link that, what are we going to call this? It's a new technique, turns anything into a touch sensor. And it's essentially, it's a research video. And so they're like, yeah, we did these experiments and we did these lab work and,
oh, that's cool. They
super cool.
They had the map of the United States, a piece of wood cut like the US, and then they set up the sensor. And then they hooked it into a computer. So where you touched on the map, it would highlight which state you were touching.
Right. Yeah, exactly. They did one where they 3D printed a drum pad. And then when you tapped it, it was like a drum set. Things like that. I mean, it very much, it has a DIY feel to it at the moment. But one of the other things are like, it's crazy cheap to do.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like, it's any surface at a reasonable price. And I just find myself going, man, like you could do this on a counter. You could have it on your floor in theory.
Well,
like talk about when you walk into a room, it knows you're there because you walked into the room.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to doing cameras and stuff, it's using this instead. Seems cool.
Yeah, I really like it. I'm thinking, oh yeah, I'm watching all sorts of stuff. This is pretty cool. I'm thinking too, like you could do like a whiteboard sort of situation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's awesome. This whole AR VR thing, man, it's el futuro. It's the future.
Totally.
I like it.
But anyways, I thought it was super cool.
That's very cool.
And totally worth watching the video. It's not available yet, but like I said, I definitely feel like this is coming down the pipe for like some sort of combine it with a Raspberry Pi, some cheap sensors, and you can have some really cool, like, I made this.
Projects. Yeah. That does sound really cool. Yeah, unfortunately, the one downside to that video is it's not available in 360.
Sure.
Google's helping with that. So Google this week launched a Street View Ready program for 360 degree cameras. So there's one of the challenges with like the current state of 360 cameras is how good is it for different things? And, Google has come out and they've now started a qualification thing. So, program. So if you're a manufacturer, you build a camera, you can get one of four different qualifications through Google, and it will let consumers know exactly what kind of a camera you're getting. The four categories are Street View Mobile Ready, Street View Auto Ready, Street View VR Ready, and Street View Workflow Ready. Let me see here. Street View Mobile Ready cameras can upload photos to Street View through the mobile app. So just, you know, these are sort of your not lowest end necessarily, but your simplest, not really super sophisticated. Basically, you take the video, you connect it to your phone, and you upload it. Boom. Very simple, straightforward. Auto-ready cameras are designed for cars. And I don't understand. I don't know exactly what the context of that would be other than you hook it up to your car.
I like to make yourself throw.
Yeah, right. The VR devices capture geometry for VR content. So these ones are the ones where I think that they're really cool because it's the 3D 360, which means it gives you these are
the stereoscopic.
Yeah. So it's either you either get stereoscopic, so you do get depth sensation with everything, but also ideally you get 6 degrees of freedom, so you can actually not only can you twist your head in each direction, but if you lean in or squat down,
right, you get that experience
as well. So those ones are,
man, I want one of those cameras for my business. I will someday figure out how to justify it.
And then workflow ready cameras feature tools for publishing to Street View accounts. So this is their most sophisticated stuff that you can push to Street View right away and get access to that. That's probably the biggest market, which is why I think they gave that, you know, wanna really target that. Those are companies like GoPro, Samsung, Human Eye Tech, and the like. So, yeah, pretty cool. It just, you know, the only reason I bring this up is because they're just, they're keep on trucking forward on this VR, AR, 360 camera stuff. In addition to that, this week, they also bought a company called Alchemy, like Owl, but Alchemy combined. The reason why this is a big deal is because, you know, this company for creating two different really popular VR experiences. One, Rick and Morty Virtual Reality, which just launched a couple of weeks ago.
I haven't seen it, but that sounds awesome. Yeah,
I've heard nothing but good stuff. It was the creator of...
They started season three recently, you know, didn't they?
Well, they had the first episode that they launched for just one day on April Fool's. They showed the first episode just to mess with people. Yeah. It's like the opposite. It was the anti-April Fool's joke. They actually did it. but the rest of the season comes out later this year. But what was cool about this VR game was the creator was just like, I have a really good idea for a VR game. And went to Alchemy and said, I want to build a VR game for Rick and Morty. And Alchemy was like, that sounds fantastic. So they built it. It's been getting really good reviews. But the big one that everybody knows is the Job Simulator, where you're the robot, you get to eat donuts, stuff. And
It does have that look.
Yeah. Job Simulator has been a huge success. One of the things that they get a lot of credit for is their interaction with your hands is done really, really well in those games. Given the limitations of the platform, they make it feel very they're really good at allowing you to interact easily with your hands and giving you designing the game so that is easy to do, and which not everybody does. So anyways, Google bought them this week and nobody really knows why. Nobody knows what this is going to mean for their games that they've already published. Google clearly values them and what they're doing and wants to keep moving forward on this technology. And I doubt that it's just buying exclusive titles. I have a feeling that they're buying them for their tech as well. And yeah, it should be pretty cool.
So I bet. So I want to talk about the consumer use case a little bit too, while we're trying to talk about this. Okay. I heard two things this week. So the first one was I read an interesting article that was talking about, museums and how they're slowly dying, which on one hand you're like, that seems ironic. or just apropos, maybe is the right word. But essentially the number of people going is significantly declining, and it's a huge sharp decline for millennials in their 20s and 30s. They just think that museums are boring.
That's dumb.
And so they're trying to find new ways to attract people, and they're turning to virtual reality and a lot of other different technology to really help out. So, I mean, I don't know if like, I feel like the last museum I went to, it had like the audio track thing where you put on the earphones and you punch in a number into some device and then it tells you about the thing that you're looking at. These are a little more sophisticated where like you might put it on, but then as you walk around to something, it knows where you're at automatically through a bunch of different sensors and then just tells you about it. So you don't have to type in a number, try to figure it out. They also are trying to like augment experiences. Like they talked about they had these beads that apparently were super complicated and intricate, and you could throw on a VR headset and actually touch it and manipulate it and move it up close and look at it. And, sounds pretty cool, and essentially they're trying to re-engage, and it seems to be working for attracting more millennials and stuff and helping museums survive. The other story I heard, this was really interesting, actually. I was listening to the Oregon State girls basketball coach at a speaking event, and he was talking about how they integrate technology into their recruiting efforts. And so he goes, one of the things they do is they'll show them this video of of a game that they played the previous year and or just the season in general and all the ups and downs, and it's like it's super emotional and really well done and it's all great.
Yeah.
You know, and he goes, and then what happens is they go next door onto the actual basketball court, which is like, when we're there, it's empty. There's no one there. It's like, oh, it's just a basketball court.
Right.
He goes, and then he has them stand in the center court stands, like near the bench. He goes, and we throw a VR headset on.
Nice.
He goes, and we put them in our final game.
Yeah.
And he was like, and it was, I think he was saying it was like against Stanford. He was like, and it's a packed house and the fans are going wild. The team's playing great. And he goes, and it immerses them. It puts them there so they can feel, here's what it would be like if you were on the team. This is the actual atmosphere and what it's like. And he was just like, it's a very powerful recruiting tool that they take advantage of. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
That's really smart. I mean, that's how they got, that's one of the tools that they used to get Kevin Durant to come to Golden State Warriors, threw on a VR headset and said, this is what it's like living in San Francisco, man. It's pretty cool. And, and so I can believe that works all the better on college students, getting them hyped for the game.
High school students,
yeah. Yeah, I like it.
Thought that was pretty crazy. All right, well, I want to end the show.
Wait, before you do that, I just clicked over to my news feed while you were talking, and
yeah,
Lyft and Waymo just announced they're working together on self-driving car tech against Uber.
Who?
Lyft and Waymo. So, like, the guys that are leading in self-driving car technology currently suing Uber for stealing their technology are going to team up with Lyft, the only competition that Uber has in the space of ride-sharing companies, are going to team up to serve up a hot plate of you get what you deserve to Uber. Just
doesn't seem the smartest move ever, but perhaps.
Anyways.
Maybe they don't care. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, which... yeah, Uber had a bad week in court.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We're going to look into criminal charges potentially. Not great. So, speaking of another company that seems to be struggling at the moment, Snap.
Snapchat. Okay. This has become a bit of a ritual for me, and I enjoy doing it. Snap stock.
Yeah, I just looked it up.
Yeah. Well, it's not down as bad as it was, but it is currently at $19.14. You could have gotten it at as cheap as $8.18 10 a.m. yesterday.
The chart looks bad.
Yeah.
It was like hovering around 23, and then boom, straight drop to 18.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's starting to come back.
Just a cliff. Yeah, starting to.
We'll see. We'll see. Maybe this is the
bottom. What happened, James? Tell me what happened.
That was well, they announced that was their very first quarterly report. And, you know, which is a big deal to have your earnings report, your first one, because everyone kind of like, all right, now you're really good. And if you can't figure it out from the stock price, the results weren't great. Mm-hmm. So, they've got about 3 million daily snaps and growth is not quite there anymore. Plus, they lost $2.2 billion. And I don't know, Wall Street has this thing against losing money.
Yeah.
So weird.
No, it's not.
Now, they did say it's only more like $188 million because of all these one-time employee stock compensations and stuff, which are like... Wall Street still does not like losing.
Yeah, you've gone the wrong direction in your first.
Which, by the way, revenue grew almost 300%, so that's good. But they're still not growing. So okay. I thought this was interesting, actually. Yeah. So they managed to not mention Facebook at all until one investor just straight up asked, This Facebook's scary.
Yeah.
And here was Evan Spiegel's line.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to this.
Just because Yahoo has a search box, it doesn't mean they're Google.
Yeah. Just
dude, that's what losers.
I was gonna say. But in just as a just so we all remember when Google came out with a search box, that's what people said about them with the reverse names. Just because this little tiny company Google has a search box doesn't mean they're Yahoo search. Like, if it's a better product, you will get crushed by it. Jeez. Facebook has a bigger user base than you. And they're growing, or Instagram has a bigger user base than you, and they're growing faster than you. And because they're copying you.
And they've turned it into a platform. They're friendly with people. And he's talking. The right response would have been, you know, they're doing a lot of really good things. We still think our product is better. And yeah, of course, we're watching them carefully. And clearly, they're watching us carefully.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and you could have even given them the compliment of, look, it's a clear sign of what we're doing right, the fact that they're copying us, you know, at as fast as they can, which means when we innovate, yeah, they follow.
Do I love it? No.
Yeah. And you mean you could give some patented, hey, nobody hates competition? Or they could have gone with the company line that they've been going with all along and just said, look, we're not a social network, and Facebook is. They only care about this technology insofar as it builds a social network. We're a camera company, and we won't be beat by a social network company that thinks they can come in and, you know, just change the name of what you do, you know, reframe it. I'm just, he's such a brat.
The brat took $550 million home last quarter.
You know, and he's, well, yeah. It drives me nuts when you see it, and it's just like, you've got so much potential, man. You just got to have a little bit of self-awareness. That's it. Not even a lot.
He's got to be so upset he can't stand
it. I know.
He can't be. He's got to be not be sleeping at night and just fuming over what's going on. I mean, this is the only thing I can, like, that's how I would be reacting, I'll be honest. I don't think I would be. I don't know. And he's got to sit there, and he knows that you got these investors who are going to be a little smug about it and, you know, are like us.
Right. Yeah.
And I just, what about Facebook? You know,
yeah.
Just, you know, what about them? I don't know. I get it. His answer wasn't very good though.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know. For all of people's complaints about Zuckerberg, he's better about not giving answers like that. You know, he's.
Well, I think at this point, Zuckerberg, he's got a vision. He knows where it's going. And there's times where he's like, yep, we copied.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. we know what the best way to do this is. Or, yeah.
And Zuckerberg will tell you, like, dude, this is seriously like their like seventh iteration of this. Is this a surprise?
Yeah, this is
remember,
what we
like. What was it? Slingshot and Ping, and, or was that the one? No, was that it? Ping.
Yeah,
is that what they called their thing?
No, it's Poke.
Poke. Yeah. That was it. Poke. I think that was Apple who did Ping.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways,
that's right.
another failed network. But anyways, like they did all these things and. You know, so Zuckerberg's like, why are we surprised? We've just been copying since day one. Well,
I think what's surprising to everybody is that after Poke failed and after Slingshot failed and after a lot of their
instant stories are not doing great.
Yeah, well, after a lot of their copycats have failed, the fact that one of their copycats have finally worked, and as soon as it worked, they went, okay, we got one that worked, now let's build a platform, you know? And
so I'm listening to the book, Great Byte. Oh, go ahead.
my expectation is that Snapchat probably got a little bit overconfident about it. What? You there?
Yeah, I got Snapchat got a little overconfident.
Yeah, they got a little overconfident because they watched Facebook fail in trying to copy them and not succeeding, try to copy them, not beat them, try to copy them, not beat them. And then all of a sudden this is happening, and I'm sure they're not sure what they're, you know, how great are we, you know? Yeah.
Or so I'm reading this book, Great by Choice by Jim Collins. And this chapter I just listened to, it was talking about firing bullets, then cannons. And it's this idea of like, you do little experiments, you do little products, little tests, little things, you're firing bullets, you know, and little varies by company size.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a billion dollar company, little is a $10 million project, you know? But he's like, and what you're doing is you're calibrating. And he goes, and then once you hit with your bullet, and you go, ooh, this worked, that's a success, he goes, then you fire the cannon.
Right.
And that's what we saw happen with Facebook, where they tried all these different bullets and watched them all fail over and over and over. And, you know, in each iteration, they would do it. They'd see what would happen. And they never wouldn't really see any uptick. And they would just leave it there because they're like, eh, whatever, it's not hurting anything. But they would move on to the next project.
Right.
And, you know, and then the next year, come back, fire another bullet. The next year, come back, fire another bullet. And this time, they hit one, and it actually, like, it hit.
Yeah.
You know? And that was where they went, okay, this seems to be working. Fire all cannons. Yeah. And that's when you watched it, you know, propagate all across Facebook super fast. It was everywhere. And those in themselves are like, yeah, some of them work, some of them won't, whatever. We'll figure it out.
Right.
And then they said platform development now, you know, and that was like, and we all looked at the other cannons, the other shots, and went, wow, the cannon. And then they came out with a platform, and that's where we went, oh,
yeah.
That was
yeah.
the cannon.
Yeah, ball. Right, exactly.
Those other ones were just bigger bullets.
Yeah, exactly. It was, they were upping the caliber just to say, yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting. And I've got to imagine Snap is just looking at it going, oh, we can't, like, we not only can't we compete with that, that wasn't even on our roadmap, that we didn't really want to.
Yeah.
But now that they've done it, it's the same way that what Amazon has done to Google and to Apple and to Microsoft, where they're all going, oh man, that's a lot of skills.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
How do we, but they also recognize my problem of I can't remember all of them. I need some sort of help, or I need it to be very flexible.
Right.
And they're all trying to figure out how to deal with that. And I've got to imagine that Snap's doing that same, like, how do we deal with this? And he's just got to be so upset. And because from a pure numbers standpoint, Facebook's winning, period. Yeah. And like you said, it's like they just had a bigger user base to start with.
Right.
They couldn't help but do better.
Right. Once you found one that you could, once you finally found a feature that was going to, that Snapchat didn't, you know, it was something that people wanted, whether they knew it or not. And it was something that Snapchat, yeah, I don't know. They had to find that one feature that they could, that would stick. And then once that happened, it's like, yeah, they're just tearing at Snapchat. And the worst part about it was Snapchat pushed it.
It's almost like now they're daring them to come out with a new feature.
Yeah.
That's the worst part. Like, yeah, you fire the bullet for us, please.
Yeah, tell us what's next.
Yeah, do our R&D work for us. Which, by the way, that was one of the other interesting findings they found, was that companies who were super successful, they call them 10X companies, they go, yeah, not necessarily the most innovative. One of them is Southwest Airlines. And they're like, they literally copied the playbook of another company. They went, we love what you're doing. And they copied everything. And they made no bones about it, because at the time everything was regulated and they were in California, Southwest was in Texas. And so the California company was like, yeah, sure, here's how we do it all. And they're like, and they literally, the CEO at the time was like, yeah, our business plan was a it was back then. He goes, it was a photocopy. That's what we did. Of everything. You know, I'm just like, oh, okay. And then deregulation happened and well.
Yeah.
But
that's the hard part about, yeah, I don't know. I look at this and I'm just like, Snapchat is so clearly Twitter. I've been saying it for a long time, but it's just
right.
And not like Twitter phase two, where their stock prices went up again for some reason that nobody, that, you know, cause Jack has finally like done something semi-right. Like, I think we are going to start watching the countdown timer. Well, the best part of this company is that they've got no financial oversight. There's no force that will push Evan Spiegel to step down, do something else, grow up, and come back. There is no...
We're watching that same thing with Uber happen as a private company. Like, he's got all the power.
Yeah, there's no Steve Jobs opportunity for Evan Spiegel. There's no, I'm kind of a...
Which, by the way, the more I'm thinking about it, I'm like, you know what? Maybe he is like Steve Jobs, but the early version.
Yeah.
Maybe there are some parallels with there.
Don't say that.
And it's not
good.
I
don't think that's true.
The Great by Choice, so one of the examples they give, during the timeline that they followed them, it was Apple and Microsoft dominated during the time frame. And then they address the fact that clearly it's different, because at the time they published the book, Apple was the most valuable company in the world. And they're like, and we're kind of beating them up in the book, so let's address that. But during that time frame, which was part of it was during Jobs' first stint, they're like, dude, Apple, no, it's not good. They did a ton of innovative stuff, and it didn't matter. Anyways, Snap stock is down. Ha ha. So
yeah, who was the Dig creator?
Kevin Rose.
I knew it was a Rose. I couldn't remember what it was. Yeah, I get the feeling that Kevin Rose and Evan Spiegel are similar guys. Just young with a platform that's hot and growing, and you get pretty self-satisfied with yourself, and they're just going to miss something, you know? And Dig had some pretty hardcore competition from Reddit, but they were doing quite well. And then...
Dig defeated itself.
I would say, and then they misstepped. And I think that's what we're looking... I mean, that is the worst thing that could happen to Snapchat, is in their desperation to come up with something really clever, do a design overhaul and just expect their user base to like it. Because what's amazing about Dig was that it was a 3-week period. The company was ruined over the course of 3 weeks. And...
Yeah.
And, you know... But so much damage had been done within those 3 weeks that they could have flipped back to Dig V3 and it wouldn't have been enough. And you know, and they were too proud to do that. Because it was all they could have done to stop the bleeding would have been to just kick back over to the old version of the site. And they didn't. And they didn't say they were going to. And, you know... And I get the feeling that's in store for Snapchat, an app overhaul that everybody's really excited about and is like, yeah, this is going to really rattle Facebook to their bone because they're not going to see this coming, and just really upset the user base. And
could happen, dude. Those kids are lucky. Yeah.
Because it's, you know, best case scenario, they're Twitter, which Twitter has just sort of persisted. But, you know, they haven't been under, they've had the guiding hand of really great investors who have financial power over the company. That's not the case with Snapchat. It's entirely possible for Evan Spiegel to go, no, we're making a change because we have to, and be wrong about it. and just destroy it overnight. I think that's going to happen.
You hope.
No, I think it's, I'm putting my money down.
That's right. My new, what is it? The spokesperson or CEO of L2, the Galloway dude. He tweeted, he was like, this is the beginning of the end of the death spiral. It's like, oh man, he hates him too, which
pardon.
Anyways, that's the show. That's the show.
Nice.
Think about it. Which tech giant would you get rid of? Would you get rid of Snap? Probably.
No, man. Why would I? They'll get rid of themselves.
Yeah, why waste a vote? Yeah. That's funny. That's funny. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. And thank you so much for listening to episode 294. We really appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes with all the links at furloughbros.com. Again, episode 294. If you'd like to get them sent directly to you, just do that right on the same page. We'll send them to you. Monday morning. It's easy. And then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners like you. If you would also like to contribute, we have four different levels. We got fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens. Each have their own level of reward. Again, you can check out furloughbros.com to figure out how you can also become a patron. And with that, okay, I can do this. I am James Furlough, and my game-winning basket shot warrior of a brother is Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.